we present Imelda Staunton as Mrs. Patrick Campbell in Moonbeam and Mrs. Pat by Peter Ling.
Dorothy, over here. I couldn't see you. It's so crowded now.
I managed to keep a chair for you. All the other tables are full.
All except that one.
Where, dear? The plump lady, sitting by herself with two empty chairs.
Which one? I can't see any.
She's got black woody trousers on. And her hair's knotted up under a purple bandana. You can't miss her. What's the matter?
Oh, nothing. Just for a second, I thought... I'm being silly. She reminded me of someone I used to know years ago. Now... any luck?
Afraid not.
Oh.
I had to go all the way to the tabac near the station, but it was no use. They didn't have any English papers either.
Oh, dear, it's so dreadful not knowing what's going on.
Well, I spoke to an English couple who were just off to Paris, and they told me it's true.
Oh.
England declared war on Germany yesterday morning.
I knew it. I knew we should never have come abroad for our holiday. If we'd gone to Auntie Dolly in Bournemouth, none of this would have happened.
I think there'd still have been a war, Mummy. Even in Bournemouth.
You don't seem to realise how serious things are. We'll simply have to cut the holiday short and go straight home.
Oh, I suppose so. But it does seem a shame when the weather's...
No! I distinctly asked for cream in my coffee and you have given me milk and watered-down milk at that. Take it away and bring me a fresh cup, do you hear?
Of course! I know that voice anywhere. Well, you can tell, can't you? She used to be a famous actress.
Are you being deliberately stupid, young man? Coffee with cream? Is it so hard to understand? Oh, God! Why does nobody listen to me anymore?
It's Mrs. Patrick Campbell. I haven't set eyes on her for 18 years, but that voice, it couldn't be anyone else. I thought you said she was famous. Well, I've never heard of her.
Well, she was famous.
Then, that's how I met her.
But I don't understand.
It wasn't long after your father was killed. At Passchendaele. You were still a baby and I was trying to find a job, so I answered an advertisement in the newspaper.
Down, Sally! Georgina, yes, and you too, whoever you are. Please, be patient.
Well, what is it?
Good afternoon. Am I speaking to Mrs. West?
That rather depends. Who are you?
My name is Whittle. Mrs. Whittle. But I've come about the advertisement.
What advertisement?
Oh, dear. This is Ashfield, isn't it?
This is a cottage on Lord Latham's estate.
Oh, I beg your pardon.
It is called Ashfield, and I am in residence for the time being. I also happen to be Mrs. Cornwallis West.
Oh, I'm so glad.
You are entitled to your own opinion, of course. What is it you want, Mrs. Whitby?
Whittle, I answered the advertisement. You said you wanted an assistant to do some literary work.
Oh, that advertisement. Ah, yes, I remember. Yes, well, you'd better come in. Now, behave yourself, Sally. Now, stop pestering Georgina. Oh, dear silly creatures, both of them. The griffins are such darlings, aren't they? Come into the drawing room. So, you are an editorial assistant.
Well, no, not exactly. But as I explained in my letter, I am a shorthand typist, and I'm very interested in literature. I'm sure I could soon learn whatever you want me to do.
I don't claim that the work you are to undertake will be literature. I have been commissioned to write my autobiography. I hope you are an early riser.
Well, yes, fairly early.
That's fortunate. I shall probably begin to dictate before breakfast.
Oh, and after breakfast?
After breakfast, you can type it up from your shorthand. How soon can you start?
Well, let me see. When would you like me to start?
Right away, if possible. You see, I have to leave at once. I'm due to give a lecture in Brighton this evening, and I need someone to stay with these two darling creatures. They must never be left unattended. Would you mind sleeping here tonight? You won't be alone.
Won't I?
No. Sally will sleep in her basket at the foot of your bed, but Georgina will probably curl up on your pillow. I do hope you're fond of dogs.
Well...
yes, you must be. Everyone loves my little angel. And while I'm away, you may as well start reading everything I've written so far. So here you are. Now take great care of it. It's the only copy.
Thank you.
Oh, and by the way, Sally suffered a minor heart attack recently. If it happens again during the night, you may have to get up and give her some brandy. Is something wrong?
No, but this manuscript, My Life and Some Letters, by... You are Mrs. Patrick Campbell?
Of course, my dear. Who else could I possibly be?
But what is she doing here, of all places? We must go and speak to her.
Must we? I'm beginning to understand why there's nobody else sitting at that table.
Don't be silly. I admit she's a little eccentric, but she's a very great lady. Come along. Mrs. Patrick Campbell?
Well, what is it?
Oh, that's exactly what you said the first time we met. Though it was a long while ago. Perhaps you don't remember me.
You're absolutely right, I don't.
Oh, I was your secretary. I helped you when you were writing your book.
Ah, now you mention it, but I'm afraid I don't recall your name.
You never did. I'm Mrs. Whittle. And this is my daughter, Dorothy.
Yes, indeed, Dorothy. I remember you perfectly, my dear.
I was only a baby at the time.
Yes, and you've grown so much since then. So have I. My dear Mrs. Would you be so very kind to go and search with the waiter? Tell him we need more coffee with cream. Make sure he understands that.
Very well.
Be as quick as you can. Thank you so much. Now, Dorothy, you must sit down and tell me all about yourself. How old are you?
19.
Oh, you're so wise. Such a good age to be. I was 19 once, but I wasted the whole year by getting married and having a baby.
There's something I don't understand. Mother told me you were Mrs. Patrick Campbell and Mrs. Cornwallis West.
Oh, yes, dear. I was always an optimist.
And I suppose you had another name when you went on the stage.
Certainly not. Even after I married George Cornwallis West, I continued to use Mrs. Patrick Campbell as my stage name.
Oh. It's only nowadays actresses don't have names like that. They're called things like Greta Garbo and Norma Shearer. I mean, they're never Mrs. to anybody.
The poor dears. Ah, here comes your mother. By the way, what's her name?
Whittle. The same as mine.
Oh, how very convenient. Ah, Mrs. Whittle, did you have any success?
He said he'll bring the coffee soon.
Oh, sometimes my optimism can be tried too far. We shall see. Is there any news from London?
Oh, yes. Isn't it dreadful? You know we're at war with Germany.
Oh, and all the theatres have had to close. Simply dreadful. It's the same in Paris. I was there when the crisis began and my hotel was requisitioned to be turned into stables for the cavalry. What disgraceful. That was why I packed up and moved. It was a nightmare journey with Moonbeam grumbling at me all the way like an old husband.
Moonbeam?
My darling little Pekingese, I never go anywhere without him.
Oh, where is he now?
I left him with the concierge at my hotel. As long as he's curled up in a pair of my old drawers, he's blissfully happy.
But why did you come down to the Riviera? Why not go straight back to England?
Oh, no, I couldn't do that. It's those wicked regulations, you see. The last time I set foot in England, 8 years ago, they put my little angel into quarantine, and I swore I'd never, never let it happen again. So I've decided to move to Pau. It's very near the Spanish border, so in an emergency I can slip quietly over the Pyrenees. Spain is still neutral, thank God.
Oh, it sounds thrilling. But how will you get to... Where is it? Pau?
Oh, there's bound to be a train heading in that direction sooner or later.
But going all that way? By yourself?
Well, perhaps I'll have a travelling companion. What do you think, Dorothy? Do you know of any adventurous young woman who might keep a poor, lonely old woman company?
There it goes. That was our train to Pau.
Oh, it's ridiculous. Sure, they could have waited. They must have known we were on our way.
I'm afraid not. It's funny to think Mother will have left Paris and be halfway to Calais by now. Tomorrow morning she'll be in England. I still don't know how you persuaded her to let me come with you.
Oh, your mother is such a capable little creature. She'll get back to England quite safely. Besides, she could see you wanted to come with me. You have a pioneer spirit. Oh, what's the name of this place?
Toulouse, I told you. There weren't any direct trains to Pau. Everyone has to change at Toulouse.
Ah, this is like Crewe Junction. It reminds me of my touring days. What time does the next train leave for Pau?
11 o'clock tomorrow morning.
And what time is it now?
11 o'clock. 12 hours to wait.
Is there a station buffet?
It's closed.
I don't think I care for Toulouse very much. No wonder Monsieur Lautrec moved to Paris.
Yes, Moonbeam dislikes it too, don't you, my precious?
Moonbeam should be grateful he's here at all. I thought that ticket collector was going to put him in the guards' van.
But by the time I'd recited a couple of speeches from Pelias and Melisande, he was most appreciative.
And I slipped 10 francs in his hand. I think that helped.
Impossibly. Well, what are we going to do from now until daybreak?
I suppose we could try to find a hotel.
At this time of night, if we found one open, they'd overcharge us. No, we must stay where we are. Now, you'd better count the luggage again.
3 suitcases, 1 Gladstone bag, 1 hold-all, 2 walking sticks, an umbrella, and 1 large black hat box. And Moonbeam.
You'd better give me the hat box. It contains all my love letters from George Bernard Shaw.
They must mean a great deal to you.
Yes, indeed. When I persuade him to let me publish them, they'll be worth a fortune.
You've had such an extraordinary life. Love letters from Bernard Shaw and 2 husbands. Whatever happened to Mr. Patrick Campbell?
Nothing very much. Poor dear Pat. He was a bank clerk in the city when I met him, and he fell madly in love with me.
And you fell madly in love with him?
It must have been a kind of madness, because he was earning a pitiful salary and he had no prospects whatever. We had a 3-day honeymoon at Staines. Then he went back to work at the bank and I stayed with friends in Bournemouth until I felt brave enough to break the news to my family.
And then you had a baby?
Not immediately. Though when little Beo arrived, everyone agreed he was unusually premature.
Beo?
He was christened Alan, but I always called him Beo. It means beloved. At first we were very happy, but then we were very poor, and it's so hard to be both at once. That's why Pat decided to go abroad. He'd heard that a man could make his fortune prospecting for gold in Australia, so off he went. I soon realized I should have to earn enough money to support myself and little Beo. That is where I became an actress. I was given a letter of introduction to a theatrical agent, Mr. Harrington Bailey.
Have you had any training for the stage, Mrs. Campbell?
No, sir, not exactly. No formal training.
Informal training?
Well, yes. I've played juveniles with a very good amateur company, the Anomalies Dramatic Club in South Norwood. In His Power, and The Money Spinner, and The Purse. Oh, I'm so sorry.
My dear Mrs. Campbell, whatever is the matter?
I hardly like to tell you. You think me so foolish.
No, no, you must tell me. What's wrong?
Well, as I was coming into your office, up the steps to the front door, I heard such a pitiful cry. And when I looked over the railing, down in the area, I saw...
Go on, go on.
I saw a cat. A poor, sad cat. Desperately trying to lick her newborn kittens, but they had all been drowned.
Oh, dear, you mustn't distress yourself. There.
Afterwards, he offered me a contract. £2.10 a week to play a young widow in a new comedy opening at the Alexandra, Liverpool, on October 2nd, 1888. Rehearsals 1 week prior to opening, fares paid to join company and on tour.
And were there really any drowned kittens outside?
Of course there were. At least I think so. I'm sure there must have been this anyway. Anyway, he engaged me for my abilities as an actress, which was just as well, because Pat had decided the Australian goldfields were a washout. So he enlisted in the army and was killed in the Boer War. In 6 years of marriage, I hardly knew what it meant to have a husband. But then I had my first big chance, a role in a melodrama, The Trumpet Call at the Old Adelphi Theatre.
Was it a good play?
No, it was rubbish. But it was West End rubbish. On the first night, in the middle of my big scene, my skirt somehow came apart and slipped down, revealing me in my... Well, it was very revealing. The stalls gasped, the gallery roared, but I simply picked up my skirt and held it in place until the end of the scene. I wasn't going to let it ruin my exit. The next morning, every single critic gave me a wonderful review. And do you know, some people actually sent anonymous letters daring to insinuate that I had done it deliberately. Can you imagine it? Dorothy. Oh, Moonbeam, would you believe it? She's asleep. Moonbeam. Oh, yes, perhaps you're right. It's been a long day. And tomorrow will be even longer, because we must find somewhere to live.
Is that another room through there?
No, it's the bathroom, I think.
You think it's a bathroom?
Oh, I wouldn't look if I were you.
What on earth do you mean? Let me see. Well, I've seen worse on tour.
What do you want to do? Try somewhere else?
There's nowhere else I can afford. No, this will have to do. Now, let's open the shutters. There. That's better. Oh, I can smell oranges and spice. And I can hear the crickets chirping such a cheerful sound, just like their spring.
I'm afraid it's not exactly luxurious.
Never mind, it has a luxurious name. The Pavillon de Madrid. It sounds like a first-class hotel.
But it's only a first-class pension.
Pension, dear. Pension has such unpleasant associations. Still, there's a pleasant little garden. You'll enjoy that, won't you, my precious? Yes, you will. Don't contradict. Now, when you've unpacked everything, Dorothy, you can take them for a walk. And tomorrow morning, I want you to do some shopping for me.
But I won't be here tomorrow. I've got to catch the next train to Paris.
But there's no hurry. Surely, you said you'd wait until I was settled.
But you've decided to stay here.
Well, yes, but it will take me a day or two to settle in, or a week, perhaps, even longer. Who knows?
I'm sorry. Mother's expecting me to go home right away.
She wouldn't begrudge me a little more of your company, I'm sure. You can send her a telegram and explain. You can't possibly leave me like this.
Well, I don't know.
I beg you, Dorothy, I'll give you the moon if you stay. I had no money, but I still have a little jewelry, ropes of pearls. Look, you shall have them all. I swear it. Here, look here. I show you my special treasures. All my old programs, photographs. They're all collected. Ah, here. Here's a portrait of me in the second Mrs. Tanqueray. George Alexander made me his leading lady at the St. James's. I became a star overnight. Oh, it was so wonderful. Well, at least it would have been if Alexander hadn't been a stiff, pompous bore. At one moment, he was supposed to clasp me in a passionate embrace. It was so absurd, I burst out laughing. I couldn't help it. When the curtain fell, the stage manager stopped me in the wings.
Excuse me, ma'am. I've a message for you.
A message?
Mr. Alexander's compliments, and will you please not laugh at him on the stage?
My compliments to Mr. Alexander, and please tell him I never laugh at him until I get home.
I heard that. How dare you?
Not another word. I can see you're angry, and your wife wouldn't like you to speak to me when you're angry. You know how it upsets your digestion. Good night.
Of all the infernal, infuriating women...
I don't know how you put up with her, sir. And that's a fact.
Do you suppose I enjoy it? She's impossible on stage and off, and she makes my life hell. But there's no one to touch her, damn it.
Is this all the change you have from a 50-franc note?
It was a very long list, as usual. Oh, and I got some more toilet paper. You always put down things like chocolate and peaches, but you never remember the toilet paper.
I have been writing to my old friends, telling them how I am, where I am. Do you seriously expect me to neglect my friends in order to think about toilet paper? Where are you going?
To my room.
I want you to take Moonbeam for a walk.
I've just had a long walk, and I'm very tired. Excuse me.
Dorothy. Come here. Closer. You want to go back to England, don't you?
It's over 3 weeks now. Mother will be so worried. I must go.
Of course you must. I'd love you to stay, but I'm sure your mother needs you more than I do. Poor dear, how can she manage without you at her age? No, I insist you must go to her at once. I've just been writing to my friend Egypt. I shall tell her that I need her.
Did you say Egypt?
Her name is Agnes Claudius, but I christened her Egypt because she has a profile like Cleopatra and a smile like the Sphinx. Very well, Dorothy. You must start packing for your journey. So, dearest Egypt, she has gone, and I am alone once more. I wish you would come and rescue me from this abominable place. As winter sets in, the weather is becoming very cold. I sleep in my dressing gown with two hot water bottles at my feet and Moonbeam curled up in the small of my back. I take my bath standing up in a tin tub surrounded by boiling kettles. I must have a decent bath installed, but I can't afford it.
Dearest Stella, forgive this belated reply, but everyone at the passport office said, don't you know there's a war on? At last I found an elderly man who remembered Barebone Tree and Pygmalion and you. He could not promise, but for Mrs. Patrick Campbell, he will try to pull some strings.
So wonderful to hear from you. I'd go down on my knees in thanksgiving every night, only I fear I'd never get up again. I enclose a little money so that on your way through Paris you might purchase a few things I need. Sometimes I think you're the only one who ever really loved me, apart from Moonbeam. And George Cornwallis West, at first. He'd seen me on the stage in False Gods, rather an unfortunate title.
Come in.
Good evening.
Good evening.
I sent in my card because I wasn't sure you'd remember me.
Of course I do. Your wife is a great friend of mine. I hope she's well.
Yes, Tien is very well indeed. She should have been with me tonight, but at the last moment she had to go to an important meeting, so I came to the play on my own.
How very kind. We have a glass of wine.
Thank you.
And what did you think of False Gods?
I thought it was very interesting.
Oh, dear. That means you went to sleep.
Not a bit of it. But at any rate, I stayed awake all the time you were on the stage. I mean to say, there's plenty to look at.
I beg your pardon?
Well, all that Egyptian stuff. Slaves parading around and all those musicians clanging and tooting away.
Mr. Tree likes to give the audience their money's worth.
Actually, the play was a bit over my head. But you look gorgeous in that clean drapery thing with black and yellow stripes.
Nonsense. I look like an elderly wasp in an interesting condition.
Sorry. I beg your pardon. Went down the wrong way. Anyhow, I thought you were stunning.
Thank you. That's very encouraging.
It's a pity Jenny couldn't come. She'd have understood the play better than I did. She's the brains of the family, interested in politics and so on. Her first husband was a politician, you know. Randolph Churchill.
And I hear your stepson is following in his footsteps.
Young Winston, yes. Trouble is, Jenny spends so much time at committee meetings. She's a great organiser, you know. Between you and me, I hardly see her nowadays.
That must be very lonely for you.
Yes, it is rather. I suppose you think it's pretty rotten of me talking about her like this, but...
No, not at all, not at all. I can sympathise. You see, my husband was killed by a sniper's bullet in the Boer War, so I understand what loneliness is like. May I ask you a personal question, Mr. Cornwallis West?
Please.
I hope you won't be offended, but may I call you George?
Of course. Stella.
Oh, dear George. So handsome, shining, and golden. Oh, my golden pheasant.
Stella. Wake up, dear. It's me. Egypt.
Oh, Egypt. Yes. False gods. Egypt. Is this really you?
I think so. After that journey, I'm not quite sure.
Oh, I'm so poor, darling. I should have been on the doorstep to welcome you with Moonbeam in my arms. No, 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 no.
Oh, my angel, no, you mustn't climb on the bed now. Mother's getting up to welcome our dear friend. Oh, how are you, Idris?
Exhausted. Getting to Pau was bad enough, and then, when I finally found the Pavillon de Madrid, I discovered you'd moved to the Pavillon de Navarre.
Oh, didn't I write and tell you? I know I meant to. I couldn't have entertained you at the other place without even a proper bathroom. Oh, this is so much nicer. A little more expensive. Alas, but they gave me a special rate when I told them I used to act with Sarah Barnhart.
Forgive me, I must sit down. Oh, I've been lugging this shopping all over town. Now, the boxes of Scottish oatmeal for your porridge. Lavender soap from Guerlain.
Oh, you didn't forget the Tornados. It's impossible to get Philip's steak here.
In the sling bag. I had no idea you were so fond of Tornados.
No, they're not for me, but Moonbeam adores them.
Down, Moonbeam.
In a moment, I'll show you your room. The furniture's quite hideous, but I put an alarm clock beside your bed so you'll know when it's time to get up and make our morning tea. I'm not an early riser nowadays, I fear. Oh, we're so high up here, the air's very thin, not enough oxygen. That's why I look so much older.
Stella, you look superb. Your lovely black hair is still a shining crown, and your eyes are as dark and lustrous as ever.
Do you know? I'm feeling better already. I just hope this hotel isn't going to be too dreary for you. The other guests are perfect, dears, but hardly entertaining. Exactly like a Wednesday matinee audience, all played pastels and ear trumpets.
Oh, well, you never stayed in one place for very long. I expect you'll soon move on to somewhere more amusing.
But I thought you understood. Surely you know you've come to bury me, my dear.
Honestly, Stella, you do talk rubbish sometimes. You're not ill.
No, not yet. But it won't be long. I've been at death's door so many times, I'm beginning to recognize the neighborhood. While I was in Belladonna, I was involved in a traffic accident and had to take to my bed, my body having sensibly decided that the tomb was preferable to playing opposite Alexander. For months I hung between life and death, and then a long, grey convalescence. Oh, but with occasional bright intervals.
Stella, my dearest. Now tell me I mustn't stay long.
Oh, but you must. You must stay with me as long as you want, or as long as your wife will let you.
Yeah, but I'm not to tire you. The doctors say you've been very ill.
Oh, yes. And my doctors are never wrong. They know what I need to make me well.
And what's that?
They told my nurse that she must send at once for the man I love and bring him to me. And he must be told he is to obey me entirely. And if I am tired of my bed, I must sit on his lap with my arms round his neck. And when I want to be kissed, he must kiss me at once. Any hesitation might kill me immediately. The poor nurse said she didn't know the man, so how could she fetch him? And I wonder myself what sort of man he might be.
Oh, you will get well, I promise you. You must live, Stella. Live and help me.
How can I help you? You're a married man.
Oh. Yesterday I walked out of Jenny's house. Left her a letter of farewell. And this morning she sent her a reply. She said we'll both be happy when it is over.
I think we shall all be happy when it is over.
Oh, my dearest dear.
Oh, my own George.
My beautiful boy. Oh, you've got lucky, Paul.
I took him down by the stream. And look what I found growing there under the trees.
Oh, wild cyclamen. Oh, they're exquisite. You must put them in that vase beside my bed. I remember George once bought me some cyclamen. What's the date today?
The 6th.
Of course. Exactly. 26 years ago today, George's decree absolute came through at last. And 2 hours later, we were married at the Kensington Register Office. And what a scandal that was. Beerbohm Tree was simply furious.
Why? What had they got to do with him?
Well, it was Monday, April 6th, 1914, and we were in the last week of rehearsals for Pygmalion. I knew Tree would never let me have any time off, so I didn't ask. I just disappeared. We had 3 days at Crowborough. George was a very keen golfer, and I turned up on Thursday just in time for the dress rehearsal. I think that's why the play was such a success on the first night. You sometimes go say that you rehearse too much. Oh, I can't tell you how wonderful it was to be married. There's nothing like the deep, deep peace of the double bed after the hurly-burly of the chaise longue.
And you were really happy?
Oh, so very happy. And I felt sure I could make George happy. I thought I'd rescued him from an unfortunate marriage. I believed I could help him.
But your happiness didn't last long.
Of course it didn't. Because that absurd Archduke got himself shot in Sarajevo, and before we knew it, England was at war. Naturally, my husband and my grown-up son both did their duty. George rejoined his old regiment, the Scots Guards, and Bale, who had not been particularly successful as an actor, enlisted in the Royal Navy. I was half mad with worry.
At least you still had your work. You were kept busy.
Yes, yes, during those ghastly years, I had one of my greatest commercial successes, a mystery play, The 13th Chair. I don't remember how long it ran, but I know I was in my dressing room talking to a friend who'd come round after a matinee. I was full of news about my darling Bale, and I could have talked to this tiresome old man. He was some sort of biologist. He would keep droning on and on about ants.
Yes, Professor, absolutely fascinating. But I want to tell you about my...
Yes, they certainly are fascinating. These wonderful little insects have a very complex social structure within the nest. Did you know that?
No, I didn't. Now, my son.
Quite amazing. Such incredible organization. The tiny creatures even have their own police force. And their own army.
Really? No navy, I presume?
Well, no. That would hardly be possible.
Excuse me, madam, but...
Oh, Bessie, you've come to help me off with my costume. I am so sorry, Professor. I shall have to ask you to excuse me. I'm sure you can find your own way out, can't you?
Why, yes, yes, of course. Goodbye, Mrs. Campbell. It's been a great pleasure.
Hasn't it just? Thank you so much. Goodbye. Detestable man. I was trying to show him this newspaper cutting, my beloved Croix de Guerre, the military cross and bar, but he never stopped talking about his disgusting ants for a single instant. Oh, thank heaven you came to my rescue.
Excuse me, madam. I'm so sorry.
Don't just stand there. Oh, unbutton me. Why are you staring at me like that?
This telegram came for you.
Bale is dead. A shell burst right beside him. He was killed instantly.
Oh, madam, I don't know what to say.
Don't say anything. You must be quiet. Very quiet. I can't believe it. I won't believe it. Bale isn't dead. He's only asleep. I feel sure, if I sit very still indeed, if I am strong and calm, he will wake and come to me.
He was killed in December 1917. 11 months later, the war was over. Too late to save him or me.
But your husband was alive. That must have been some consolation.
I tried to think so, but when he came home, he had changed so much. He spent more and more time in the country. Staying with friends, he said.
How did you find out he was lying?
One weekend. He was at an hotel in Milford Haven, and suddenly I could stand it no longer.
Stella? What the hell are you doing here?
I came to ask you the same question.
Well, you know what I'm doing. I'm playing in a golf tournament.
So you said. Only you were so impatient to get away, you left your bag of golf sticks in the hall cupboard. You couldn't even be bothered to act out a convincing lie.
Clever devil, you've always got to be in the right, haven't you? For 2 pence, I'll throw you over that cliff.
But go on, why don't you? Do you think I want to go on living with an unfaithful husband?
When I was married to Jenny, you were happy enough to be loved by an unfaithful husband. Oh, damn you, that hurt.
It was meant to. George. George, it's all wrong. I didn't come here to fight with you. Tell me about it, George. Tell me who she is.
Her name wouldn't mean anything to you. It's no one you know. I've known her for a long time, you see. We've been lovers off and on for 20 years.
But that's before I met you.
Yes.
So these sporting weekends of yours, they were all spent with her.
I'm no good to you, Stella. I want you to divorce me.
Never! Now you come back to Kensington Square now, this minute.
I'd rather be in hell than live in the same house as you. It's over. What's the point of keeping up a pretense?
I have given you my love, my home. I paid all your gambling debts. I even let you borrow on my credit. I've got a stack of bills you've run up over £5,000.
Look here. If you divorce me, I'll give you £800 a year until the debts are paid. I can't stay fairer than that, can I?
But I didn't want repayment. I wanted my husband, and in the end, I had neither. I thought I would drown in a sea of debt.
But you hadn't stopped acting, had you?
No, but for some inexplicable reason, the West End management seemed to fight shy of me. And for years, I dragged my aging bones round the provinces with a repertory of popular plays. Mrs. Tank, The 13th Chair, some Ibsen. People said my Hedda Gabler was a tour de force. I suppose that's why I was forced to tour. Never mind. I always enjoyed travelling, meeting new people, seeing new places. Oh, do you realise I haven't set foot outside this hotel since I moved in?
But you get tired so quickly these days. Walking might be too much for you.
Well, who said anything about walking? You could hire a taxi cab. Couldn't you? A petite promenade in a motor car would be delicious.
Well, I'll see what I can do. But you were telling me about your tours around England.
Not only England, Scotland, Ireland and Wales, even the United States of America. I went to New York with a new play by Ivor Novello called A Party, and that is what it was. A theatrical party with a flimsy plot about two rival actresses, one of whom was loosely based on Miss Tallulah Bankhead, and you can't get much looser than that. The other was a caricature of me, and I played me. Everyone knows I adore dogs, so I had to carry a white Pekingese with me all the time. And yes, yes, you clever boy. That was how we first met. But by the time the play closed, I was on speaking terms with only one member of the cast, and that was Moonbeam. So, naturally, when I went to the last night party, I took him with me.
Is there anyone here who still loves me?
So, glad you could make it. Let me get you a drink. What would it be?
A very large one.
Does he want a drink too?
Quite possibly, but he's not having one. He's in disgrace.
Well, what was it this time?
He had too much to drink before we left the theatre. It was a very long ride in the cab. When we arrived, there was a small puddle on the floor, and the driver had the temerity to ask who was responsible for this. I drew myself up and replied,
I am. And swept past him without leaving a tip.
Okay, I'll be right back. Maybe you'd like to go over and say hello to Noel Coward.
Oh, is Noel here? I saw his last play in London. It's so clever. All the characters talk like typewriters. Such a pity Noel was so bad in it. I must go and tell him.
Mrs. Campbell?
Oh, yes, dear. I don't think we've met, have we? I expect you on my order.
No, Mrs. Campbell. I'm Chuck, in charge of stage properties. All through the run, I've been bringing that darn dog to your dressing room every night and collecting him right after the show.
So sorry. How silly of me. You must have done your hair differently. And what? And now you want something?
Sure. I want the dog.
My dear man didn't get served. The management gave him to me as a parting gift, didn't anyone tell you?
No, disgraceful.
They shouldn't keep secrets from you. You must take a firm line with them in future. Enjoy the party.
Here you are, one large drink.
Sip it slowly. Tell me. Isn't that Catherine Cornell over there?
Yeah, I believe so.
Oh, yes. She's unmistakable. A Siamese forehead and a mouth like a galosh. Such a nice woman. If you knew her, you'd even admire her acting.
Are you sure you want the window open?
Of course. Wind it right down. It's a perfect spring day.
Did the American management really give you Moonbeam as a parting gift?
Certainly. But they didn't find out till later, and by then I'd left New York. Oh, this is a red-letter day for us, isn't it, Moonbeam? A drive into the country. Where are we going?
I thought over the bridge and along by the river, as far as the golf course.
No, not that way. Golf always reminds me of England. I try not to think about that.
Well, you seemed very pleased when you had a letter from England this morning.
Well, that is quite different. It was from one of my very best friends, John Gielgud, the dear boy. It's so good of him to write. He said he'd been so worried about me.
Did you ever work with him?
Twice. Well, once and a near miss.
What do you mean?
Well, once when he was very young. It was Ibsen's Ghosts. He played Oswald to my Mrs. Alving. Oh, I helped him as much as I could. And years later, when I was in New York, he offered me a part in a new play he was about to direct. Strange Orchestra. He wanted me to be a garrulous old woman who ran a shabby boarding house, quite unsuitable for me, of course. But he was so insistent, I finally agreed. And it meant going back to England, and I was anxious about Moonbeam and those cruel regulations.
Good morning, madam. Have you anything to declare?
May I remind you of Oscar Wilde's reply to that question? Anything to declare, he said, only my genius.
Just the three suitcases and the cabin trunk, is it, madam?
I knew Oscar quite well before the tragedy overtook him. Such a charming man, though he had dreadful teeth. I blame his mother. She can never have instructed him in the importance of regular brushing.
And the hat box, madam?
But of course, after that shocking business with the Marquis of Queensbury, he was a broken man.
If you wouldn't mind, madam, the hat box, if you please.
Personally, I never understood what all the fuss was about. As I said at the time, it doesn't matter what you do in the bedroom so long as you don't do it in the street and frighten the horses.
Thank you, madam. If I might just look inside.
Moonbeam, you bad boy. However did you get in there? They took my little angel away and shut him up in a hamper marked rabies. I went to the quarantine home. They wanted to keep my darling there for months. During the next fortnight, I did my best to rehearse for the new play, but every afternoon when the rehearsal was over... Yes, my dearest boy, here I am. Oh, missing you more than ever. Do you miss me too? Oh, my darling. You were crying. Oh, I know. I can't bear it. I cannot bear it. I can't. Who's in charge here? I changed my mind. I won't stay in this brutal country another day. Let me sign the papers or whatever it is and give me my dog. We're going back to America.
How are you feeling now?
I've caught a cold. It's the worst of driving a hired car. You never know who's been breathing on the upholstery.
You never finished telling me the story about those rehearsals. Did you really give up your part in the play?
I had no alternative. Another week in the prison would have killed Moonbeam and me as well. I left England that day and I promised him he'll never, never have to go through that ordeal again.
John Gielgud can't have been very pleased.
Oh, he found someone else to take over my role and the play was reasonably successful. It would have run longer if I had been there, but you can't have everything, can you? Oh, dear. You better shut the window now, sir. It's so hot, I can't stop shivering.
Bonjour, madame.
Please come in. I've been expecting you. This is Mrs. Campbell.
Madame Campbell, comment allez-vous?
I'm not at all well, and please let us speak English.
Oh, forgive me, the doctor told me you speak excellent French.
I used to, but I've given it up for Lent. How do you know, my doctor?
He has sent me here. Open your mouth, please. I wish to take your temperature.
But I've got...
That's right. Don't try to talk.
Madame Lescaut is a trained nurse, Stella.
And the doctor says you are a very difficult patient. You refuse to allow him to give you an injection or a suppository.
I won't let people stick things into me I don't know about.
Madame.
He shouldn't have sent you here without asking my permission.
Very well. Allow me.
In any case, we're not staying here, are we? We're going to the coast to sea air.
Not, madame. You cannot be moved at present. You have a temperature of 104, and you need to be looked after.
Egypt. Miss Claudius can manage perfectly well.
And it will be an honor for me to nurse such a famous actress. You see, I know about actresses. Sarah Bernhardt was my godmother.
But we acted together. Oh, I've never forgotten. One of the critics wrote... Last night, Madame Bernhardt acted Pelléas and Mrs. Campbell played Melisande, and they are both old enough to know better. How rude! But she was a wonderful woman. The bravest, the greatest actress I ever saw.
Oh, yes. Even greater than Giza.
Don't talk to me about Giza. What did I ever tell you, Egypt, what happened when Love User came to play a season in London? She wrote and asked if she could borrow my scenery from Tanqueray. So I wrote back saying I would be honored. All I asked in return was a box for her first night. The tickets duly arrived, accompanied by a bill for 4 guineas. I was a little surprised, but I paid up and went along to the theatre. Just before the curtain went up.
Mrs. Patrick Campbell?
Yes.
Excuse me, ma'am. They said I was to give you these.
Oh, gardenias and laurel leaves. How beautiful.
Compliments for the management, ma'am.
What a charming token of gratitude. Would you be very kind to look after them for me until the play is over?
Oh, no, ma'am. You're to throw them onto the stage at the end of the second act.
What? I lent her the scenery for nothing. I paid for my own box, and now she wants me to throw flowers at her. My compliments to Mrs. Duser, but I shall not be here at the end of the second act. Tell her I've gone home to put my gardenias in water.
Do not trouble yourself to fill the bath, madame.
But she's so feverish. If we bathe her and give her tension,
I have taken her temperature again. It is too dangerous. We cannot take that risk.
Is there no way you can bring her temperature down?
I have done all I can. We must simply wait and pray.
She's so terribly restless. She keeps calling out, talking to people in her sleep.
Egypt, where am I? What's happening?
She's in her sleep, darling. Don't worry.
Hold my hand. I think I feel a little better. I shall get better, shan't I? I must. There's no money coming in. I must get back to work.
Don't think about that now. Try to rest.
I want to go on acting right to the end, like Sarah. But it's so difficult. I always used to think the big battles of life were fought when we're young, but not a bit of it.
It's when you're old and your work's not wanted that the battle rages on and on.
This letter arrived while you were asleep, madame. It has an American stamp.
Thank heaven. It will be from dear old Murphy in New York. I told him I was unwell. Give it to me. Oh, dear. I'm shaking. Shall I open it for you? Yes, please.
Yes. Mr. Murphy sent his love.
Oh, he's enclosed the money order.
Oh, bless him. I knew I could count on him.
You'll have to sign your name on the back, and then I can cash it on.
Yes, give me my pen. Quick, where do I have to sign?
Here, on the dotted line.
Where? I can't see you.
Your fountain pen, madam.
Stupid fingers are trembling so much. Oh, you guide my hand, each
of course. There. Now, write your name there.
I try. Oh, I can't hold it.
All right, I'll pick
it up. No. I can't do it. Where did that bird come from?
What the? What do you mean?
Great blackbird has flown through the window.
The windows are shut, dearest. There's no bird here.
No, look. Don't you see? Perched on the back of my chair. Moonbeam, where is he? You chase it away.
He's asleep on the foot of your bed where he always is. There is no bird here.
You can hear the wings beat.
Don't distress yourself, madame. I'm going to give you a little more medicine. That will help you to
sleep. Yes. I must sleep. And when I wake, I shall be well again.
That was the reporter on the News Chronicle. Somehow they'd heard that she was ill. I was afraid it might wake her.
I do not think so.
Isn't there anything we can do?
Nothing. The doctor said it is just a question of time now.
What was that? I thought I saw her move.
No, Moonbeam has woken up. He lifted his head and looked at her.
I hope she knows he's there, keeping watch. Did you hear that? Was it my imagination or was it...
No, I heard it also. Like a bird flying overhead.
So very still. Stella? My dearest? Oh.
What is it?
Moonbeam. He's crying.
He knows. It is over.
Dear Mr. Murphy, by now you will have received my telegram with the sad news. Mrs. Patrick Campbell died in her sleep in the early hours of April the 9th. The next day she was buried in the local cemetery after a very simple ceremony at the English church in Pau. The money you kindly sent her was sufficient to purchase a simple plot with 10 years' upkeep. No headstone, but she hated what she called all that nonsense. And I was glad there was nothing to weigh down upon her. She had fought to remain free all her life. I asked the sexton to plant purple violas and pansies on her grave because she once said they had Pekingese faces. My great problem is Moonbeam. If I take him back to England with me, he will go into quarantine, and I feel sure Stella will haunt me forever.
Bonjour, madame.
Madame Lescaut, this is a nice surprise. You're not working today?
Perhaps you do not know. In effect, I have retired. I only take on cases which interest me.
Ah,
tonight, madame was something very special. I shall do very little more. But this morning, I felt I must come and speak with you. And how is Moonbeam?
Oh, he's pretty well, I think. I take him out for a walk twice a day now. Moonbeam! Come and say hello! He hasn't seen you yet. He's getting short-sighted in his old age. As a matter of fact, I'm rather worried about him. You see, I'm leaving this weekend, and I still don't know what to do.
Forgive me, madame, but may I show you a photograph? I carry it with me always.
Well, thank you. A fox terrier?
An English dog. I called him Robinson. He was my companion for many years, and when he died, I never wished for another. But I think, you must correct me if I am wrong, Moonbeam does not dislike me, so...
He's seen you?
Yes, good boy. Oh, what a good boy. What do you say, Moonbeam? Would you like to come and live with me?
Well, he seems to be very happy about it. And it's what she would have wanted.
Oh, I hope so. You know, since Robinson died, I've sometimes wondered, do you think there will be dogs in heaven?
Bound to be. If there weren't, Mrs. Patch would never have agreed to go.
In Moonbeam and Mrs. Pat by Peter Ling, Mrs. Patrick Campbell was played by Imelda Staunton. Egypt, Sarah Bedell. Madame Lescaut, Zulema Dean. Mrs. Whittle, Jilly Bond. Dorothy Whittle, Una Beeson. George Cornwallis West, David Collings. Harrington Bailey, John Hartley. George Alexander, Roger May. The stage manager, Mark Montgomery. The professor, Jeffrey Whitehead. The dresser, Patience Tomlinson, the actor, Ross Livingston, the props man, Andrew Branch, the customs officer, Stephen Critchlow, the page boy, Joshua Taub. Other parts were played by members of the cast. The play was directed by Enid Williams.